Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is our membership drive. More about that in just a moment. For centuries, humans have been entertained by death. From Edgar Allan Poe's morbid literature to true crime documentaries and horror movies, 84% of the U.S. population above the age of 13 are true crime consumers, according to a report from Edison Research. There are podcasts, TV shows, movies, books, and more. And we're talking about our obsession with true crime this hour with Deborah L. Jamillo, film and television studies professor at Boston University. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us, Kelly S. Bowling, assistant professor in the College of Journalism and Mass Communications at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Welcome to All Sides, Kelly.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
All right. So, Deborah, let's start with you. Do you think that the craze behind Edgar Allan Poe back in the day is the same as a true crime entertainment now? Did Edgar Allan Poe start all of this with our obsession with death?
I don't think Edgar Allan Poe started it, but I think there is a longstanding morbid curiosity, whether we're thinking about folks paying to watch fights to the death or gathering to watch public executions, or even, you know, in Paris in the 1800s, gathering to view dead bodies who have been unidentified, that have been attached to mysteries published in the press. You know, how did these people die? Who is at fault? Is it foul play? The connection between narrative and unsolved death or violent death, this has been a subject of public fascination for a very long time. And we can't link it to one specific thing, but it has been there and it's manifested itself in multiple ways, well before television, definitely.
Yeah, Kelly, you chuckled whenever I asked about Edgar Allan Poe. So is death entertainment been a thing for as long as there's been humanity, I guess?
Well, I mean, you look in the early 1800s and it was very popular for women to write about true crime in magazines. They gave women those feature articles because they didn't think they were real journalists. And those became some of the most popular reasons people were reading the magazine. Agatha Christie is not true crime, but she's, you know, the most highest grossing novelist of all time. People like, sorry, I'm dealing with some coughing stuff. People like to see justice served. They like to solve a mystery, you know? So I don't know that it's just true crime as much as it is. We like to see something come to a complete ending. We like to solve that mystery.
Well, for all of the people out there who agree with that, who like to solve a mystery, I'm here to remind you that this is our fall membership drive. Support this station today, and you can attend a great event that we have as our thank you gift to you. WOSU is hosting a murder mystery dinner. The event is Tuesday, October 28th at 6 p.m. right here at the WOSU headquarters. We are going to transform our Ross Community Studio into a masquerade ball, and there will be a murder. And you will help solve it, all while enjoying a fancy three-course dinner. So don't miss out on this unique event. It's just for WOSU members. Make a gift of $30 a month or a one-time gift of $360, and you and a guest will get two tickets to join us for this special event. Again, this is Tuesday, October 28th, and the theme is to get you into the Halloween spirit. So give right now, WOSU.org, or call us, 866-897-9678. Don't miss out on this experience. WOSU is going to transform our space into the Billionaires Club for a Midnight at the Masquerade. It's an interactive murder mystery dinner, and it's led by a group called the Murder Mystery Company. They're from Shark Tank fame, if you watch Shark Tank. And we're encouraging people to dress up for the event. You can have evening wear. You can even wear a ball gown, Venetian masks, suits or tuxes are encouraged, but of course not required. But we want to make this a high-class night just for WOSU members. Get ready for a glamorous evening of mystery, intrigue, and murder at a masquerade ball murder mystery party. And don't forget about that fancy three-course dinner, too. This is a great way to support public radio and get this thank you gift and spend time with other WOSU members. This is going to be a great event for public radio people just like you. $30 a month as a sustainer for two tickets or make a one-time gift of $360. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And Kelly, back to you. I was looking up some history of, you know, true crime and people's obsession with all of this. And I came across True Detective magazine, which was out in the early 20th century. It was highly popular. Where did this magazine, I don't know, or either of you, if you've looked at this magazine, where did it fit into our media consumption of talking about true crime?
I haven't done any research on that magazine specifically, but I am familiar with how important magazines were at early 20th century. And again, most of the articles were written by women because they didn't deem them to be true journalists. And it was very popular. I don't know, Deborah, are you more familiar with that than I am?
I'm not. I actually haven't. I haven't done any research on it. But I think, you know, alongside pulp novels, for example, you know, this type of publication would have helped people, help people's, I guess, this seedier side be satisfied, right? There's always been an audience for the forbidden or the taboo, anything that sort of the mainstream deems maybe improper or unacceptable. So it makes perfect sense with the rise of the press in the U.S. and the rise of pulp fiction and things like this, the True Detective would sit alongside it.
Well, let's jump ahead a little bit then. Film and television are what changed true crime to make it even more sensational. So we could go to Unsolved Mysteries from 1987. That's a title that comes to mind. Is that one of the first like TV shows that kind of like hooked us into this? Deborah, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what hooked me. My childhood is very much attached to Unsolved Mysteries. And then it was sort of, I'll call it the gateway drug of true crime, because then it moves you into all of the other kind of news magazines that pop up. Obviously, America's Most Wanted is right there alongside Unsolved Mysteries, but with a different, sort of with a different mission and a different angle to it. But absolutely, these are key texts in the history of televised true crime.
And Kelly, I guess Unsolved Mysteries turned into 48 Hours, Dateline, you know, those are all based on true stories, right? So I can list off, I guess, a million-ish kind of different true crime shows. But then there became, when you go from 48 Hours and Dateline and Unsolved Mysteries that are true crime, and then there's the true crime-ish shows, you know, those ripped from the headlines. Tell me about the difference between true crime and true crime-ish.
Yeah, I love the ish. I think that's a fantastic addition. So true crime by definition needs to be true, first and foremost. So anything ish does not technically fit into the genre. So anything based on a true story or sensationalized or ripped from the headlines like Law and Order, those are not technically true crime. The average consumer probably doesn't understand the difference and doesn't recognize the difference, especially in this algorithmic consumption world we live in. We just get shown the next show that matches our, you know, watching habits. But yes, as we move into those, it becomes less and less true crime and more sensationalized and dramatized and editorialized to keep people watching and to keep people interested and maybe to even make it a little bit more macabre than it originally was.
And Deborah, what is that? Talk to me about that transition from the 48 Hours and the Dateline, where they're actually real stories, to the true crime-ish ones, where they're ripped from the headlines. Has that evolved even more? Because I feel like there are so many fictionalized dramas now that are about crime.
Yeah, well, actually, this is a pretty old phenomenon. I would say Think back to Dragnet in the 1950s and before that on radio, certainly, where they would, use actual case files from California. It was a way to, interestingly, to skirt any sort of prohibition that on television, against sensationalism or, any the creation of narratives that would scare people, etc. If you rip them from the headlines, if these actually happened, then that was a way to put something more sensational and something perhaps more violent or inappropriate on television, but not be accused of having this sort of morbid imagination, right? And so we see that develop over the years to now we have shows like not just Law and Order, but something like Mindhunter that's using actual the actual words of serial killers and actual events that happen to dramatize, creating this really, really interesting ancillary text to true crime, so that if you know the crimes themselves, then you can follow this dramatized version and see it in a slicker way, and perhaps see it in a way that is maybe more palatable, that removes you from, you're kind of one step removed from the thing itself, that can be so gruesome to see in a true crime sense, where you have like archival photos, etc. If you move it into that, semi-fictional space, it appeals to, what pulls people to television in the first place, which is a really good story.
I have someone in my life who really enjoys dark British crime dramas, spends a lot of time, Norwegian crime dramas, that kind of thing.
Heck yeah.
And when I told him about this show, and whenever, and he said to me that he wants it to be fictional. He, if it happened to a real person, he does not want to know that. Do you feel like that's common? There's two types of people. There's some people who really want to know, want it to be about a real person and want to know, and then there's other people who are like, please don't tell me this was a real person. Kelly, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the participants that I've spoken to have also told me they don't want to actually see it on TV because they don't want those images seared into their mind, especially the real ones that Deborah's talking about, those actually from the case files. I think sometimes it is easier to disassociate yourself with a fictionalized story as opposed to knowing this actually happened to someone who lives in the same state that I do. But it's also, feels a little bit less capitalistic to use a murder to sell laundry detergent if it's fictionalized.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I want to say thanks to Gerald and Margot Glenn of Delaware. Thanks for your support. We can't wait to see you at our event. This is a very special event. This is a brand new thank you gift for us, and we're putting together this great event. It's a murder mystery dinner hosted by WOSU. Tuesday, October 28th at 6 p.m., right here at the WOSU headquarters, we're going to transform our Ross Community Studio into a masquerade ball, and there will be a murder. And you will help solve it, all while enjoying a fancy three-course dinner. The company, the Murder Mystery Company, which is of Shark Tank fame, is going to come here and they're going to put on the show for us. So everyone who comes to the Murder Mystery Dinner doesn't necessarily have to play a part. You don't have to worry about that, but you will help solve the murder. And you can make a gift of $30 a month right now, or a one-time gift of $360, and you and a guest will be able to join us. Don't miss out on this unique event just for WOSU members. Obviously, we have a limited number of tickets if we're doing a sit-down fancy three-course dinner. So make your gift right now, and we're encouraging people to dress up for the event, maybe some Venetian masks since it is a masquerade ball. We are going to transform our space into the Billionaires Club for a midnight at the masquerade, and you don't want to miss this glamorous event full of murder, intrigue, and mystery. Join us now at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. Again, it is $30 a month as a sustainer, or a one-time gift of $360. You'll get two tickets to the event. Give now at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. And Deborah, I wanted to bring you into what we were just talking about that whole idea of someone who wants it to be true because they're obsessed with the true crime part, but then someone else who wants it to be fictionalized, like, please don't tell me this happened to a real person. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, true crime is one of those genres like horror, I think, that creates a pretty stark divide among viewers, among consumers. There, and to the extent that some people who are like anti-true crime or anti-horror will think pretty unfavorably about people who actually do like true crime and do like horror. They'll ascribe to them some sort of deviant quality, right? Like, why would you ever want to see anything? Why would you want to participate in someone's tragedy, for example? Or why would you want to see even fictionalized versions of horrific murders, serial killings, etc.? So it's very interesting that it really is polarizing in that way.
And Kelly, I guess something you said before struck me because you were saying that some people don't want to see the visuals if it's true because they don't, this is like a real person that this happened to. So is that how maybe we turned into the true crime podcast craze? Because a third of the third most listened to genre in US podcasting, reaching about 42 million Americans monthly, is a true crime podcast of one or another. There's a lot of them. Is the shift to podcasts, do you think that no visuals is a part of it?
A little bit. Yeah, absolutely. Like Deborah said, Unsolved Mysteries, I believe she said, was the gateway drug for true crime TV for her. For me, I say it's Serial in podcasting is the gateway drug to true crime podcast.
The podcast cereal, not the cereal you
Right.
eat. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I do think it has a little bit to do with the no visuals. But also, if you think back, I mean, we've been sitting around campfires for centuries telling each other stories. So the idea that you can walk around and go about your daily life while somebody tells you a really great story in your ears, is also super attractive. People like to listen while they're running, while they're taking a bath, while they're cleaning the house. I had one participant in a research study tell me that she listened in one ear while she was playing with her children. She just liked to hear a story. She wanted somebody to tell her a story. And so I think sometimes it really is that simple. True crime podcasts can tell a good story. They can spin a good yarn.
And Deborah, there's so many different true crime podcasts now, and some of them, pick a story and lay it out, and then it's two people talking back and forth. Some of them have more production to it, or sometimes it's just like literally two people with mics. Do you have any favorite ones or any ones that you've studied a lot of the true crime podcasts?
Yeah, absolutely. I've listened to so many. I have a really long commute, so I listen to a ton of true crime podcasts. I just want to kind of respond quickly to the issue of visuals, because with sound, like you can close your eyes, but you can't really close your ears, right? You can look away, but when you're engrossed in a story and listening, and someone is describing to you the condition of a body, or the layout of a crime scene, that can be almost more disturbing than seeing it because it's your imagination, right? You're creating that scene in your head. And so it can go in any number of directions. So I think sound has a unique relationship to true crime that makes podcasting, potentially scarier than watching it on television. But as far as, ones that I would recommend, I would say Noble is one of my most recent favorites. This is about a really gruesome event that took place in Noble, Georgia at a crematorium. And I really love this podcast because it's delving into some really interesting issues about race relations, etc. Using kind of true crime as a way to dig into that history. But it's also the way it's told, the way it's narrated, the way the story is crafted, it is actually pretty scary. So it does kind of really engage in this overlap between true crime and horror, and I think is really well done.
And Kelly, I saw you write down. Did you write down Noble whenever she said that? Because you were like,
I
oh, a
did,
recommendation.
absolutely.
I wrote it down too. Tell me about Kelly, do you have a favorite or one that you really enjoyed studying when it comes to a true crime podcast?
Yeah, so my favorite is Bear Brook by New Hampshire Public Media. Jason Moon is the host of that. They did a phenomenal job. I interviewed Jason for one of my studies, and what he said was, I didn't want it to be like any other true crime podcast. I really needed to know the why. Why are we telling this story? And the overarching reason they told the story was to let everybody know how genealogy data is being used, and how it can be used to help solve crimes. But also, a distant cousin of yours could send off their DNA to 23andMe, and that gets you in the database as well to help connect people to crimes. And so the overarching story was a much bigger picture of how is this data being used? How can it be used? How should it be used ethically? What should we be doing with this DNA data that private companies have on file? And so I thought that was a really great way to tell the story and give it meaning today. So I thought Jason did a phenomenal job with that.
Wow. So you both have just recommended ones that like go into one particular story. And but there's other types of true crime podcasts where each week it's two people sitting with mics and they talk about crime. I'm thinking of like My Favorite Murder or something like that. There's more of them. Kelly, what do you think of those whenever it's just like two people I don't know, regurgitating and commentating on a true crime story?
I'm not a huge fan of them.
I see, I'm not either. That's why I'm like, okay, go ahead.
But mainly because they're using other people's work to build their own business. So when they sit together across from a table and talk about a crime, they're using the work of other journalists who wrote about that crime or other media that wrote about that crime. And so the work that they're using is only as good as it was when it was published, right? So if this is an older case that they're covering and the coverage was from the 60s or 70s or even earlier, then that work is likely to be very sexist and very biased. There was a different time in publication. We've also seen that some of those types of podcasts have plagiarized journals, plagiarized books that were written about specific crimes. So basically, they're building their business on the backs of people who did the legwork. So I'm not a huge fan of it from that perspective. I can appreciate how bantering conversationally about a case would be interesting to folks. But in my opinion, I want it to go deeper and tell me something new that hasn't already been published. And I'd like to see them doing some of their own legwork.
But in the studies you've done, I'm assuming people like these, right? Because there's
Yes, there's one in particular that's, regularly in the top three, crime junkies.
that
And
was the name I couldn't think of. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
a huge audience. And crime junkies has been, accused multiple times of plagiarism, and it's well documented. That sort of brings up the idea that podcasts are unregulated. It's this gray area of media, where they would say, I'm not a journalist, so I can plagiarize. Which brings up other questionable ethics. But yeah, those are some of the most popular ones. And I think one of the reason is because of what you mentioned is they cover a different case every week. So you don't feel like you're missing something if you miss one week. You can pick right back up. But other studies have been done. And again, it shows that they're only as good as the media that they're citing. And for decades, what we've seen is that the media tends to cover white young female victims. So that's going to make those podcasts only cover white young female victims if they're not intentionally looking for other cases. So it can make their coverage very biased as well.
And Deborah, you were nodding along. So sorry if you love these type of talking head podcasts. No, you were nodding because you were agreeing. All right, got it. So what are your thoughts on these? Two people sit in a room and just chit chat about an old murder.
Yeah, I mean, well, first, like, agree with everything that Kelly's saying, definitely. But I think the different sorts of podcasts, the different subgenres, I guess you would say, of the true crime podcasts fulfill different functions for people, right? They have different purposes. And the Talking Heads podcasts announce themselves differently than the ones that go more in depth. And it's that chatting, that banter, the way in which, for example, My Favorite Murder starts with what, 20 minutes of gabbing, right? There is a gossip function, certainly, to some of these podcasts. There's a, hey, let me put on my headphones and sit around as though I'm chatting with my girlfriends, right? There's a social and a parasocial aspect to these podcasts, and I don't think they're necessarily claiming to do anything other than that, though some of them, I'll say, there's a spectrum. Some of them do claim to be on the side of ethics, right? They do claim to pay service to the tragedies that people have gone through, and so they like to place themselves in sort of the ethical true crime podcasting arena, right? Whether they succeed at this or not, it's up for debate, certainly. But I do think that there is a more popular entertainment function to those, and they're not necessarily trying to do anything different.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. This is our membership drive. Support the station today, and you can attend a great event as your thank you gift. WOSU is hosting a murder mystery dinner on Tuesday, October 28th at 6 in the WOSU headquarters. We're going to transform our studio into a masquerade ball. There will be a murder, and you will help solve it. And we'll have a fancy three-course dinner as well. Don't miss out on this unique event just for WOSU members. Join us. Get your seat now. Make a gift of $30 a month or a one-time gift of $360, and you and a guest will be able to join us. This event is right at the end of October, so you can get into the Halloween spirit, and you'll have a great time in a room full of other public radio supporters. It'll be a great event, and it'll be just for public radio members. Don't forget about that fancy three-course dinner, too. Join us and support public radio. Get access to this gift. $30 a month gets you two tickets, or you can make a one-time gift of $360. We'd love to see you at the event, so give now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. This hour on All Sides, we're talking about our obsession with true crime with Deborah Jaramillo, film and television professor at Boston University, and Kelly Bowling, assistant professor in the College of Journalism and Mass Communications at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. I wanted to get into something Kelly alluded to a moment ago. Women are especially likely to indulge in true crime documentaries and shows and podcasts. What is the appeal, and why is it more so for women? Do all women secretly want to be a detective, Kelly?
Well, this has been studied in a couple of different ways, looking at podcasts, looking at novels, television as well. And so the number one reason was that women feel like they're learning something so that they can protect themselves. Mm. They feel like if I'm ever in this situation, I may survive, right? I might not come to this same fate. There's also a situation of they want to see justice served. A lot of women feel silenced. Specifically in maybe their own violent situations. So some of my participants have been domestic violence survivors, and they feel very silenced, like they cannot tell their own story. And you mentioned earlier that people don't tell others that they listen to true crime or watch true crime because it can feel creepy, or people, look at them weird. The domestic violence survivors I spoke to see that at a completely different level. Mm. Like, you experience this in your own life. Why would you be listening? And so they listen specifically because they felt this camaraderie of a story. I'm not alone. I'm not stupid. This didn't just happen to me. It's happened to other women. And it almost has this empowering feeling for them to know that they're not alone in this world. Other people listen to these stories. Other people have had this same lived experience. So it's a really complicated layered aspect, depending on the woman's lived experience, but also what kind of media they enjoy. Do they enjoy listening to a mystery? It could be that simple. But the number one reason was always because they felt like they were learning something to protect themselves.
Deborah, what do you make of that? The idea that women are listening to true crime to learn how to protect themselves?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the most common things that I hear. And it's certainly something that I hear from my students as well. But, scholars have also written about just the basic enjoyment aspect of it, and the way in which in our society, women aren't permitted to enjoy, and certainly not encouraged to enjoy, violent media in the way that men are. And so this the way in which women have been singled out as you know, consumers of true crime, and that's like there's something wrong with that, really speaks to the idea that women aren't allowed to indulge in that side of things, right? Not encouraged to enjoy, participating in this arena that, young boys are kind of ushered into at a very young age with, comic books and horror films and things like that. So the idea that women can embrace this purely on an entertainment level with their morbid fascination intact and all of these things, I think that's something that we need to grapple with as well, right? There's definitely these more important socially significant functions that Kelly's talking about, but I think enjoyment too is a factor. Just plain old enjoyment. I want to kind of dive into this thing that I have not experienced and walk right up to this line and get like a cathartic moment out of it and recoil in horror and then walk back out and go along with my day, right? So I think that's a side of it, and it's a gendered, there's a whole gendered discussion about this that we tend not to dip into.
Kelly, I was thinking about myself with this. Before I had kids, I used to love the TV show Criminal Minds. Oh my goodness, I watched it all the time. I was obsessed with it. Same with Law and Order. After I had kids, I stopped watching those because too many of the shows were about kids, and it kind of started to scare me. So, I should I go back to it to learn how to protect myself? I don't know right now. What do you make of that with me? I don't know. I'm having you analyze me, but I can't watch Criminal Minds anymore now that I'm a mom.
Honestly, since I've been studying true crime for so long, I don't listen to a lot of it and I don't consume a lot of it. I think sometimes our lived experience changes and we get to a place where we can analyze something from a different perspective and it might change how we see things. So, a lot like Deborah, I got into true crime because I had a really long commute. And so, I listened to a lot of podcasts. It was very entertaining, it kept me awake. And I appreciated that. But I don't listen to a lot of them now because I've been researching them for so long and I see the ethical side. Isn't that great? So your own lived experience has changed. Maybe you see the stories in a different light. And I think that's totally normal.
Tell me a little bit more about your research, Kelly. You mentioned it earlier where your work is about how women are portrayed in the media, and your research on women in podcast audiences has also been cited by many news outlets, and it centers around victims of domestic violence. Tell me a little bit more about how, I mean, some of these sensationalized things just, or like make domestic violence victims even seem like it's really harmful to them, right? That's what you found?
Yeah, it is. But again, it's very multi-layered. I had some domestic violence victims tell me that their therapist told them to listen to true crime podcast so they could better understand the mind of the perpetrator, why someone would do this horrible thing. I think one victim said something to me along the lines of, I just couldn't understand why my stepdad would hurt someone he supposedly loved. And so their therapist had said, listen to this to better understand the perpetrator. A lot of them listened and then would reach out to the producers of true crime just because they felt like, okay, this is someone that's open to hearing this type of story, and I just need to share my story. Some of them would listen and participate in online discussions with other people who had similar lived experiences. So I do think it's really layered as to why people listen, specifically people who have had run-ins with the law as a victim themselves or as a co-victim. So a lot of my recent research has looked at co-victims. So these are people who are portrayed in true crime podcast as the friend or the family member of the victim and how that has impacted their life. Also very complicated. Some of them have a really positive relationship with true crime media because it helps solve their cold case, or it keeps, shedding light on their cold case. And others have a very negative association with true crime media because people keep getting the story wrong. So I think it's super complicated and more so for people who have been victims or are close to a victim.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jurovich with you for our membership drive. We're asking you to support this station today and support a station you listen to every day. As our thank you gift this hour, you can attend a great event. WOSU is hosting a murder mystery dinner. The event is Tuesday, October 28th at 6 p.m. at the WOSU headquarters. We're going to transform our space into a masquerade ball. We're calling it the Billionaires Club for Midnight at the Masquerade. And we'll have an interactive murder mystery dinner experience led by the Murder Mystery Company. They are of Shark Tank fame. And we are encouraging people to dress up for the event, and we'll have a fancy three-course meal. It's $30 a month as a sustainer, or a one-time gift of $360, and you'll get two tickets. So you and a guest will be able to join us. You can get into the Halloween spirit, you can talk with other public media fans, and you can also have a great night supporting public radio, attending this great murder mystery dinner event. We can't wait to see you there. Join us now. You are running out of time to make your gift. I want to say thank you to Susan Fisher from Canal Winchester. Thank you for joining us, and we can't wait to see you at the event. We have 19 minutes remaining in the hour, and we'd love to have 10 more people join us for this event. 10 more people in the next 19 minutes, and we can call this hour a great success when you join us. Don't miss out. WOSU is hosting a murder mystery dinner Tuesday, October 28th at 6. Give now. $30 a month as a sustainer, a one-time gift of $360. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And this is 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about true crime media this hour with Deborah Jaramillo, film and television studies professor at Boston University, and Kelly Bowling, assistant professor in the College of Journalism and Mass Communications at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Deborah, I wanted to bring you into the conversation about what we were just talking about. Kelly said that you can listen to true crime if maybe you were a victim to try to understand the other side. So tell me about this whole the other side. There's shows and podcasts that are from the mind of of the perpetrator, of a serial killer even. What is that like, having a show be from the victim's perspective versus the other side's perspective?
Yeah, this is a really interesting development, certainly lately. I was telling Kelly earlier that I just started watching the new Ed Gein docuseries, and oh, wow, they're doing something with that. excuse me, one of the units that I, actually two of the units I teach in my true crime class center on fans, web sleuths, fans of serial killers. And another unit is on murderabilia, so folks who collect artifacts from murders. So there's definitely a base for that particular type of true crime. People who are interested not just in the gruesomeness of it, but certainly also in the psychology of it. People who want to dive into the why of it all. I can't say that attempts at telling these stories have been entirely respectful to the victims. In many cases, they're sidelined altogether. The charisma that people say serial killers have is really the thing that drives these stories. And it's been fascinating to see how serial killers have been not just sensationalized in the most basic sense, but made attractive, made sexy, even inserted into, subgenres like rom-com, and it's just, adding comedy, adding humor to these stories in a way that doesn't sit well with a lot of people. So it's a really, really complicated area of true crime, or true crime adjacent media, rather, in terms of the dramatized ones. But you have the actual true crime shows like Night Stalker, for instance, which came out several years ago. And this wasn't, I wouldn't say this was glorifying Richard Ramirez, but it was definitely painting him in a light that would appeal to folks who like that darker side, who are attracted to the menace that's mixed with the charisma of the serial killer. So it's a complicated area, definitely.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about the effects of true crime media and America's obsession with true crime. And you are listening during our membership drive. We're looking to hear from 10 more people to join us for our great murder mystery dinner event in the next 15 minutes. We have 15 minutes left in the hour, and we'd love to hear from 10 more people who are going to join us for the event. Make a gift of $30 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $360, and you'll get two tickets. You and a guest will be able to come on Tuesday, October 28th. And the theme will get you into the Halloween spirit. We're hosting a murder mystery dinner called The Billionaires Club, Midnight at the Masquerade. This will be an interactive murder mystery dinner led by the Murder Mystery Company from Shark Tank. And you will also help to solve the murder. It'll be a great evening with a three-course dinner. We promise to make it a fancy three-course dinner for you, and you're going to have a lot of fun, and you'll be supporting public radio at the same time. It's a great, fun way to get to know other public radio listeners, come to an event, and experience a piece of WOSU. $30 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $360 gets you two tickets at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. 10 more people to hear from before the end of the hour. Help make this hour a great success. We're waiting to hear from you. WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. Kelly, I wanted to talk about the debate about whether violence in the media and all of this true crime-ness promotes a more violent society. Like, there's, you know, as violence in the media increases, there's research into this. Does it mean if there's more of these true crime shows, is there more crime? Does that correlate?
Well, research has looked at violence in the media and specifically not its correlation with crime. So, what we've seen is that the media is much more likely to over portray violence. So, when you look at actual FBI statistics with media production, the FBI statistics are significantly lower. We just don't see that many homicides as what we see being portrayed. But there has been a correlation between how much violent media you watch and how violent you think our society is or how dangerous you think our world is. So the more, even just simply nightly news that you watch, that's been studied for decades, the more dangerous you believe the world we live in is. And when you look at this specifically for gender and race, if you look at the victims who are typically white young females, then they're going to be the ones seeing themselves portrayed as victims over and over and over. What does that do to their psyche and how dangerous they think the world is?
Deborah, let's bring you in there. There's a phenomenon called mean world syndrome, meaning those who consume violent media perceive the world as more dangerous than it is. Do you think, does true crime help perpetuate that, or is it more just the nightly news?
Yeah, I mean, one aspect of that that is overlooked, I think, is the fact that, a lot of the true crime, in terms of the television series, and even the podcasts are, very pro-social, right? They align themselves with the perspective of police, and policing. So they have been, grouped into the same category as other shows, with other shows as propaganda. Right. So they are promoting, and by pro-social, I mean, they're not siding with the killers necessarily, right? They're siding with what we like to call good, right, over evil. And when good is collapsed with or is conflated with policing and an uncritical look at policing, then there's a whole other avenue that we can go down when we talk about true crime, right? As much as true crime series and podcasts portray white victims, they're also portraying a very particular view of policing that we know is counterproductive. It's uncritical. It's not considering how unjust the justice system can be. So for those podcasts that are looking at wrongful convictions, for example, the series and the podcasts that are looking at wrongful convictions, those are really interesting takes on the justice system as a whole, and they steer true crime in a way that really hadn't been looked at in the 80s, the 90s, the early 2000s. And it's really been in the arena of podcasting where we've seen this more critical look at the justice system in relation to true crime. So in a lot of these instances, in a lot of these texts, true crime is used as a jumping off point to talk about, as Kelly mentioned earlier, issues of race, issues of gender, but also issues of policing. And the way in which marginalized people are treated differently in our justice system and often to their detriment.
You are running out of time this hour to support us during our membership drive. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. Support this station today, and you can attend a great event as our thank you gift. We have 9 minutes remaining in the hour, and you can join us when you get your tickets. When you make a membership gift today, then you can join us for this event. Your thank you gift for this hour is a murder mystery dinner hosted by WOSU. We're calling it the Billionaires Club for Midnight at the Masquerade. It's an interactive murder mystery dinner experience led by the Murder Mystery Company. So we have people coming in to kind of put on a show for us. We're encouraging you to dress up for the event, and we are going to have a fancy three-course dinner. Get ready for a glamorous evening of mystery, intrigue, and murder at a masquerade ball murder mystery party. The event is Tuesday, October 28th, and the theme will get you right into the Halloween spirit. $30 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $360, and you'll get two seats at the event. You and a guest will be able to join us. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Kelly, I wanted to ask you about, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but the idea of this, whenever a podcast is a so-called news podcast, or whether it is actually, like, whether they're journalists or not, right? So whether they're going to tell both sides of the story, whether they're going to be fair to the police or very critical of the police. Since you teach journalism, do you worry about more and more of these shows and podcasts calling themselves news when they're not actually news?
I think that's interesting. To be clear, I'm in the College of Journalism. I teach advertising and public relations.
Oh, so okay. Sorry.
don't want to claim to be an actual journalist. I do think it's interesting because the average public doesn't necessarily understand the difference. They don't know the Society of Professional Journalists rules. They don't know that journalists are supposed to tell both sides. They don't know how things are being produced. And so, a podcast that's very unethically produced, or a documentary or a show. I mean, let's just go back to the monsters that Deborah mentioned. It can be very unethically produced. It can still draw a huge audience. So the average consumer may not know the difference. And so, the question would be, if it makes money, do the people producing it actually care if they're being ethical? It's tough. It's a tough question.
Yeah. Deborah, what do you think of that? Is there, because there's a line between entertainment and news, and sometimes that line is blurred more and more so more recently.
Yeah. I mean, one of my research areas is the news, is television news and news as entertainment. So I approach television news as a genre on television that has to, unfortunately, kind of succumb to the same pressures that other commercial shows have to, right? They have advertisers, they need viewers, they're competing with the other, either cable news shows or the other network news shows. So I understand television news is operating as any other show, any other entertainment show. Entertainment values are similar. The need to create a narrative is similar. The need to keep viewers coming back week after week is similar. So to me, there's no difference between a cable news show and Dateline. They have the exact same pressures, and they're both chasing an audience in whatever way they can. So that's sort of my perspective on that question.
There are 5 minutes remaining in the hour, and now is the time to make a gift in support of public radio. Make this hour of our membership drive a great success. Support all sides and get some seats at a really great event. That is our thank you gift this hour. WOSU is hosting a murder mystery dinner. The event is Tuesday, October 28th at 6 at the WOSU headquarters. We're going to transform our Ross Community Studio into a masquerade ball. And there will be a murder, and you will help solve it. All while enjoying a fancy three-course dinner. Don't miss out on this unique event. It's just for WOSU members. You have to make a gift right now in order to attend the event. $30 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $360, and you and a guest will be able to join us. WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. I want to say thank you to Mary Fabro in Columbus. Thank you, Mary, for your gift. We can't wait to see you at the event. There's only 4 minutes remaining in the hour, so we want you to join us now. Don't miss your chance to be a part of this event. Make a gift of $30 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $360, and you and a guest will join us. WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. Just as we end and say goodbye, I wanted each of you to, you already recommended a podcast earlier. You want to recommend a podcast or TV show that maybe does it well, you know, does true crime well, is, you know, ethically and all that. Deborah, you want to go first?
Oh, I was hoping I wouldn't go first.
Okay. Kelly can go first. Huh?
Yeah, I can go first. One of my all-time favorites is Cold by KSL-TV out of Utah. I think they did an amazing job on the Susan Powell case. They involved family. They interviewed police. They interviewed detectives that are no longer on the case, that have retired, that were willing to reflect back. I think they did a great job of not just talking about the investigation, talking about what went wrong in the investigation, but Dave Cawley also heavily focused on domestic violence. And so in the nation, domestic violence, women are 1 in 4 experience domestic violence. In Utah, it's 1 in 3. And so Dave did a phenomenal job of focusing on the issue of domestic violence and encouraging women to speak up and encouraging others to support them when they do. So again, this whole, why is the story? What does it matter? What are we learning? I thought Dave did a great job with that.
What was the name of it again?
Cold.
Cold. All right. Now, Deborah, your turn.
I'm actually going to echo what Kelly said earlier about Bear Brook. The whole issue of, you know, DNA testing and genealogical detective work is crucial to understanding the world we live in right now. So I think Bear Brook as a foundation and as a lens through which to view all other recent true crime is very, very important. There have been television shows on that laud these genealogical detection strategies, and they boost these companies that are invading our privacy every day. They boost their notoriety. So I think Bear Brook gives everyone a critical lens through which to view these other developments.
You are listening to All Sides during our membership drive. 2 minutes remaining in the hour. Get your seats at our special murder mystery dinner the WOSU is hosting Tuesday, October 28th at 6 at the WOSU headquarters. We're going to have a fancy three-course dinner. We're going to have a masquerade ball, and you can be there. $30 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $360 at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. I want to say thank you to our guests this hour, Deborah Jaramillo, Film and Television Studies Professor at Boston University. Deborah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Kelly Bowling, Assistant Professor in the College of Journalism and Mass Communications at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Kelly, thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, Amy. I appreciate it.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and this is listener-supported WOSU-FM and HD1 Columbus. And this is the last minute for you to be able to join us and get these seats at WOSU's special event. Support this station today, and you can attend this event. WOSU is hosting a murder mystery dinner on Tuesday, October 28th. Don't miss out on this unique event just for WOSU members. We're calling it the Billionaire's Club for Midnight Masquerade. It's an interactive murder mystery dinner experience, and there will be a murder, and you will help solve it. We're encouraging people to dress up for the event, but that's not required, but it's going to be a high-class night just for WOSU members. Get ready for a glamorous evening of mystery, intrigue, and murder at this Masquerade Ball Murder Mystery Party. This is WOSU. 866-897-9678 or WOSU.org. It's $30 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $360. You and a guest will be able to join us. Again, $30 a month, a one-time gift of $360. You'll be supporting public radio. Join us for this event. WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. And thanks.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.